Greetings, everyone. Welcome to the Law Hour's Editorial Review. The Editorial Review is sponsored by Truth Radio Network. It's an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour's Editorial Review is heard nationally on KU Band Radio at Telstar 5, 7 days a week on Truth Radio Network and worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Editorial Review and the Gordon Law School, please go to my website. It's georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events in the light of Bible prophecy, biblical law, and scriptural history. So stay tuned for tonight's special reports right after this message. You know, the average American household making between $22,000 and $30,000 a year spends about 16% or $5,000 of its income on food. And if that household is making between $40,000 and $60,000 a year, they'll spend about 10% or $6,000 on food. Well, 12% of American households purchase organic produce, and they buy from health food stores or organic produce salesmen, farmers markets, and so on. Now, that translates into some 34 million people coast to coast and border to border. And already, there are more than 4,000 small organic farms producing organic fruits, vegetables, and meat on 25 acres or less. And they're making at least $100,000 a year serving this growing specialty market. Some of these farms are as small as 3 acres, and they're in every state in the union. You know, old Henry Kaiser summed it up quite nicely when he said of his business success, find a need and fill it. Well, here's a need that's just waiting to be filled. And the law school has a program to teach you how to make $100,000 a year on 25 acres or less. This is a 5-day school and includes lessons on marketing, business plans, growing organic food, and the laws that govern it. Why don't you call today and order my free 4-hour CD package. Remember, that's entertaining, informative, it's educational, and it's free of charge. And you can order yours by simply calling direct 417-273-4967. Or if you're online, why don't you go to the website? It's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email. Send me an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Or call direct 417-273-4967. First olive out of the jar, Perrin's Patre. I mentioned that in a couple of articles last night. This doctrine of parens patre has to do with your children. And parents who faithfully discharge their parental obligations with assiduity and to the full extent of their means and abilities are entitled to the custody of their children. Parental rights, however, are not absolute, and they're not to be unduly exalted and enforced to the detriment of the child's welfare and happiness. Now, the right of parentage is not an absolute right of property, but it is in the nature of a trust reposed in them and is subject to their correlative duty to protect the care for the child. Now, the law secures their parental right only so long as they shall promptly recognize and discharge their corresponding obligations that they owe to the state. And as the child owes allegiance to the government of the country of its birth, so that child is entitled to the protection of that government, which, as parens patre, must consult its welfare, comfort, and interests in regulating its custody during its minority, citing Purinton versus Jamrock. Now, absent fraud, duress, coercion, and other elements which might make the consent of the mother involuntary, for which a court in its sound discretion might permit the revocation of the consent, the rights of the parties are fixed at the time of the consent and the subsequent orders of the court having jurisdiction. The state can control the welfare of your children because the state has an interest in them. That interest comes from the marriage license and the birth certificate. But I'd pass that on to you so that you'd have a little better understanding here of the state's role. When the welfare lady comes out, and she wants to ask you some questions about your children. Remember, when the state's agent, the welfare lady, comes out, she is not asking questions about your children. Those children are not yours. Those children belong to the state. And the prima facie evidence of it is the marriage license and the birth certificate, which are regulated by the statutes that are enacted by the state legislature, and your license and your registration are the prima facie evidence of your voluntary consent to follow those statutes. Regulated enterprise, contract. I received an email here concerning Sabbath communes, and it was kind of an odd email. I'm going to read a section of it to you, and then I'm going to make a comment on it. It's about 5 pages long. I won't read all 5 pages, but it says, "Thanks for your help and understanding. I'm really seeking wise counsel in this matter. Crystal, my wife, found the following example of a Sabbatarian community while she was researching her genealogy. It seems like her roots passed through this group. It seems that they had a lasting communal communities and a setting that lasted over 250 years. And it seems that something worked well for this group of Sabbath keepers. And there is also many groups that seems to be bad examples of a Sabbath keeping communal community." I want to underline that one. "There's also many groups that seems to be bad examples." I'm going to pause here and make a comment. I've watched a lot of these communal organizations. Primarily, they go together for the express purpose of violating the law of God. In this county, we've had 3 or 4. Not Sabbath groups, just communal groups. And their basic thrust is sex. So the parties that put this group together do it for the purposes of making money. And they get young people to come in there and give their labor. They take this labor, like they have one here on the other side of the county, that makes peanut butter. And then they have all of the sex that they can stand. I mean, they've got all these young women and these young men, and they just go back and forth among each other, you know, kind of like a couple of bulls in a pasture of heifers. They just kind of mix and match and pick and choose. And that's the big drawing card. And that's about as illegal and lawful, and it's about as criminal as God can make it. Now, the Amish are a group of people. They don't live in a communal-type setting like this commune that I'm describing. They live in individual homes, individual families. They practice private property rights. And they all work together in a communal setting. And they work together. I've had a few of them come here to school, and they're very unique people. And they're good people. There's just no two ways about it. And it works for them. They have some very unusual beliefs and practices, and they have to keep to themselves. If they sent their children to public school, if their children ever found out what's really going on out in the real world, they'd leave the Amish community, and the Amish know them. That's just where reality is located. Now, this guy goes on, and he says, quoting Julius Frederick Sash, 1842 to 1919, was an author and historian from Philadelphia who specialized in researching Pennsylvania German culture. Materials in this collection include correspondence, articles, books, hymns, wills, photographs, and other materials, either collected by or written by Sash, concerning the history and religious development of the Ephrata Cloister of the Seventh-day German Baptist Brethren, formed at Ephrata in 1732, and its sister community, the Snow Hill Cloister in Franklin County, that was incorporated in 1823. The Ephrata Cloister was a mystical communal religious sect founded by George Conrad Bissell, 1728, and was noted for its fracture music. And the 18th century imprints included her 18th century Ephrata imprints on religious subjects, hymn books, a copy of something here, Dresden, 1680, and biological or biographical material, biographical material, concerning leaders and members of the cloister, and information relating to similar religious groups related in Lancaster and Chester County. These sash materials were loaned to the Pennsylvania State Archives by the Seventh-day Baptist Historical Society. And then he goes on and he starts talking about the Book of Acts and how they were in a communal setting there and so on. My reading of the Book of Acts is not communal at all. It is true that while they were up at Pentecost, while they attended some holy days, they shared what they had with others. But the early New Testament Christians practiced private property and private property rights because they practiced the law of Moses. They practiced the law of God. Jesus Christ practiced the entire Mosaic law, which is not predicated upon the communist doctrine of from each according to his ability and to each according to his need. And you can just make up your mind that if you go into one of these communal operations, you're not going to be practicing the law of God. The Amish do not practice the law of God. They practice Amish theology. These communal organizations are set up for financial gain for the leaders and free sex for the members. And they give up their property rights. And any time you give up your property rights, you give up your freedom. You give up your liberty. Freedom and liberty are predicated upon property and property rights. And without property, you cannot have liberty. That's where reality is at. The law of God is called the perfect law of liberty. It could only be called the perfect law of liberty if it was predicated upon property and strict property rights. The Constitution of the United States is based upon strict property rights, and the Law of Moses is predicated upon strict property rights. Now, if you want to go to church with this communal group, or you want to have some kind of an association, you know, that might be advantageous. The New Testament tells you not to forsake the assembling of yourselves together with brethren of like mind. My problem here is that there's few people who think, act, and practice what I do. So there's not very many people like mine. Well, that's what I think of communal living. All right, there's the signal that says that we got to take a break right here. Hang on, we'll be back with more. Let's take a look at Sodom by the Sea when we come back.
Tracy Freeney, founder of Lifeline Communications. Well, you can stop trying to figure out which long-distance company has the best rates. With Lifeline Unlimited, you can make all long-distance calls you want for as little as $49.95 a month. That price also includes your local phone service, which means no more local phone bills. And we'll throw in at no charge 10 of your favorite calling services like voicemail, caller ID, and a lot of other great features. For example, let's say you want to tell all your relatives that you just had a baby. Just pick up the phone and say, "It's a boy!" In 5 minutes, your voice message will be delivered to everyone on your email list. Unlimited long distance, unlimited local service, and 10 highly advanced features, all for as little as $49.95 a month.
Good radios normally come in large packages. I have a really good radio. This is a brand new digital radio that's tiny. So small, it'll fit in a man's shirt pocket. This radio, AM, FM, shortwave, with a whip antenna, works well. It is really sensitive. I was so impressed that when I received the offer to buy a quantity of these at a very reasonable low price, I just knew that it would be a blessing to you if I went for it. And I did. And we have them. And they arrived. Here they are. I'd be happy to send you one. The contribution you make doesn't have to be very large at all. Just remember the needs of Truth Radio when you ask for the little radio, and we'll be happy to send you one as a thanks for your support for Truth Radio. Our address is P.O. Box 344, zip code 93444.
to the Law Hour's Editorial Review. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Editorial Review is sponsored by Truth Radio Network. It's an educational service in the public interest. All of these Editorial Review programs are archived for your listening convenience on the Internet at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Well, biotech beans, chemical corn, and frankenfish, along with pesticide potato. That's what's on the menu down at your local neighborhood supermarket. And we're concerned that this technology is a serious threat to our health, to traditionally bred open pollinated seeds, and to the environment and to the farmers that grow them. Now let me quote from the Chicago Tribune, which had this to say. Quote, "We are being exposed to one of the largest uncontrolled experiments in history. In less than 5 years, these companies have flooded the marketplace with thousands of untested and unlabeled products containing foreign genetic material. These genetically modified organisms pose several real dangers because they have been engineered to create novel proteins that retard spoilage, produce their own pesticides against insects, or allow the plants to tolerate larger and larger doses of weed killers." And you know what really is scary is that this isn't from Tom Clancy's latest thriller. These seeds are already a major part of the United States corn and soybean crop. Now, what happens if one of these so-called suicide genes, which prevent seed saving, goes haywire and destroys the entire U.S. corn crop? Or what if it turns out that genetically modified rice kills people or causes genetic mutations or birth defects in people like thalidomide did back in the 1950s? Well, I don't want to take that risk, and I don't want to be a guinea pig in this ill-advised experiment. I'll bet you don't want to either. Now, the law school has a program to teach you how to make $100,000 a year on 25 acres or less. This is a 5-day school, and it includes lessons on marketing, business plans, growing organic foods, and law. Why don't you call me today and order my free 4-hour CD package first? It's entertaining, informative, it's educational, and it's free of charge. Call right now. The number is 417-273-4967 to order yours today. Now, if you're online, you can go to my webpage at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Or you can call direct, 417-273-4967. Sodom by the Sea. Guess where that's at? You got it. San Francisco, California. Well, back in February, it was a red-letter day, or rather, it was a pink letter day in San Francisco, California. Newly elected San Francisco Mayor Gavin Newsom took an unconstitutional step into the history books of the United States by using a newly enacted city ordinance. It's the Marriage License Non-Discrimination Act to order County Clerk Nancy Alfaro to begin issuing marriage licenses without regard to gender or sexual orientation. Alfaro, who is a county rather than a city official, San Francisco, I might just interject, is a little unique along that line. It's the only place in the country, to my knowledge, that's like that, unless Jacksonville, Florida, does the same thing. That is, the city of San Francisco covers 42 square miles, and that's the city of San Francisco. It's located in the county of San Francisco, which just happens to occupy the same piece of real estate, which is 42 square miles. Well, immediately she responded that she would work diligently to implement the mayor's request. So San Francisco officials acknowledged that even though the marriages of lesbians and homosexuals which are being performed may not be recognized as valid outside the city of San Francisco or the county of San Francisco, the licenses issued in San Francisco are legally binding there, and they would immediately confer civil benefits for those holding the same-sex county-issued marriage certificates, even if the state rules them to be not legal. word spread through the homosexual and lesbian communities like a wildfire in a balsa wood factory, acting as though a city mayor actually had the constitutional authority to legally sanction same-sex marriages. Between 100 and 200 homosexual and lesbian couples flocked to City Hall to secure a marriage license, hoping to tie the knot before either a county, state, or a federal judge blocked the Marriage License Non-Discrimination Act and ruled that a mayor doesn't have the right to amend state law by what can best be described as an act of civil disobedience. God, this place reminds me of Sodom and Gomorrah, doesn't it? When Newsom won the general election in December of 2003, he announced that he would defy state law and marry homosexual and lesbian couples in order to fight discrimination. Newsom, who took office in January, said that he felt part of his duty was to uphold the non-discrimination sections of the California Constitution. Well, Jeffrey Kors, the executive director of Equality California, a homosexual rights group, noted that Newsom recognized the failure to issue marriage licenses to loving, committed couples is an unjust application of the law, and that Newsom was determined to right that wrong by legalizing gay marriage, at least in San Francisco. I like the way they use this word, loving. The Bible says, "For this is the love of God, that we keep his commandments." One of those commandments is, "Thou shalt not commit adultery." And sodomy is a violation of the adultery law. It's a statute, just like bestiality is a violation of the adultery law. Sodomy is a violation of the adultery law. Fornication, adultery, so on. Anyway, moral to the story is, what better place could there be for the issuance of a marriage license? A license, by definition, just go to the dictionary, a license, by definition, is permission to do something that's illegal, unlawful, a tort, or a trespass. God has prohibited this kind of activity. You need a license to perform or to participate in sodomy. So obviously, the logical thing to do would be to go to the state to get permission to do that which is illegal, unlawful, a tort, or trespass. Makes me wonder, though, why you people out there get marriage licenses. Did you intend to commit a tort or a trespass, and that's why you went down to get a marriage license? It's been my contention that there was marriage before marriage licenses, and there will be marriage after marriage license. Here comes John Kerry. He's in the news from time to time. Did you notice that? A former Special Forces Green Beret who served in Vietnam has touched a raw nerve with fellow veterans after penning a scathing column hammering Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry. "I've been deluged with emails," Don Bendel told World News Daily, or World Net Daily. "Most of the emails and phone calls that he has received are from fellow Vietnam veterans, though he says some are from military personnel serving in Iraq and Afghanistan." "Well, take a look at my website," Bendel said, "and the number of guest book entries." Bendel says the service members in Iraq and Afghanistan who have contacted him have been fervent about their desire not to see Kerry as their commander-in-chief. In his column, Bendel accuses Kerry of rewriting history through his 1971 testimony to Congress. In that speech, which has been referenced by many opponents of Kerry, he said of fellow soldiers in Vietnam, quote, "They personally raped, cut off ears, cut off heads, taped wires from portable telephones to human genitals, and turned up the power, cut off limbs, blown up bodies, randomly shot at civilians, razed villages, shot cattle and dogs for fun, poisoned food stocks, and generally ravaged the countryside of South Vietnam," unquote. And that's what John Kerry testified to in Congress. Bendel writes, "Well, I was a Green Beret officer who volunteered for duty in Vietnam, and I fought in the thick of it in 68 and 69 on a Special Forces A team on the Ho Chi Minh Trail, just for starters. We were the elite. We saw the most action. Everybody in the world knows that. But we did not just kill people. We built a church. We built a school. We treated illness. We passed out soap, food, and clothing. We had fun and loving interaction with the indigenous people of Vietnam, just like our boys did in Normandy, Baghdad, Saigon, and everywhere that American soldiers have ever served. And we all gave away our candy bars and rations to the children and our hearts to oppressed people all over the world. Now, my children and grandchildren could read your words and think those horrendous things about me, Mr. Terry. And you're a bald-faced, unprincipled liar and a disgrace. And you have dishonored me and all of my fellow Vietnam veterans. Sure, there may have been a couple of bad apples. They may have been in your outfit, but I saw none, and I saw it all. And if I did, as an Army officer, it was my obligation to stop it, or at least report it. Now, why is there not a single record anywhere of you ever reporting any incidents like this, or having the perpetrators arrested? The simple answer is that you're a liar, and your medals and mine are not a free pass for a lifetime to bypass character, integrity, and morality. I earn my Green Beret over and over daily in all aspects of my life. Now, that guy's got a good point there. Let me make an observation. Kerry was an officer, wasn't he? Now, what I understood, he was a second lieutenant or captain or something. Well, if Kerry, in fact, saw those kinds of brutal acts being committed, then he had a duty to report that to his officers, commanding officers. Now, at the massacre at My Lai, it was an interesting story that was just on, I think it was 60 Minutes last Sunday. And there was a helicopter pilot, and he flew into My Lai, and he saved 9 people out of My Lai. And he went in, and he reported what was going on there at My Lai. And, of course, for 30 years, he was castigated in the Army. See, those whistleblowers, I mentioned this to you the other day, a whistleblower is about as popular in the Army as AIDS is at an office Christmas party. And he was finally recognized after 30 years. He received some medals. I think he was from Ohio or Kentucky or someplace, Tennessee. And he made these reports. There's actually a report in the file, and he said, well, there's murder going on over here at My Lai, and I'm here to report it. And, of course, the Army did everything they could to cover it up. Just like you see in Iraq right now, the Army is doing everything they can to cover that up. Fortunately, there are independent sources. That story didn't get out because CBS broke the news. It got out because some soldiers over there sent it home by digital camera over the Internet. So it was accidentally uncovered. And don't think for a moment that it's going on in that one prison. It's going on in every prison everywhere. And I want to tell you one more thing. I'm a civil rights activist. I've been in the civil rights movement for, well, since 1982. So 22 years. I've been in jail, I don't know how many, but I had a police officer who was a student of mine one time. He said to me, Gordon, you know how many times you've been arrested? And I said, no, I don't. And he said, well, 32 times. Well, boys and girls, I have been arrested and jailed on civil rights issues and tests at least 32 times, because that's what Trevino told me. He looked it up. I've never kept track of it. I've been arrested and jailed a number of times after that. And I can tell you from personal experience that in our jail, I don't care whether it's your local county jail or it's a state prison, they use torture in our penal system against the prisoner. I've had it used against me numerous times, and so has my wife, and I think any civil rights student in my school would tell you the same thing. Any of my students that have asserted civil rights will tell you. Now, we don't call it torture here in the United States. We call it pain compliance. They'll twist your arm behind your back until you scream. They will rub their knuckles up and down on your rib cage until you want to die. they will bend your fingers and twist your arms, and they will make no mark. In fact, I had one guy who said, don't make any marks on him. I can assure you that you will hurt for 2 weeks, but there will be no bruises and there will be no marks. And that group that went over there to Iraq, some of the members are prison guards and policemen. Let me assure you that prison guards in America and policemen understand what this thing that I'm describing to you is all about. It's not torture. It's called pain compliance. And they're trained in it. And I'll guarantee you, when they get through with you, you'll talk. Well, most people will talk. I don't know that everybody will. And with some of the real heroes of the Vietnam War, you know, like Senator McCain, locked in a cage for 7 years and they never broke him. Now, some of those guys broke, but when they broke, let me tell you, there was pain like none of you people have ever experienced. Those guys were tough. All right, hang on. We'll be back with more when we return right after this break.
How about we eat there today?
Nah, they have too many kids working there.
Well, what do you have against kids?
Kids today. They're off in their own world with their headphones on.
There's yellow light.
Riding their skateboards all over the place.
Harold's yellow light.
Playing their stupid video games.
Red light!
Totally oblivious to the world around them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
They don't have decent values anymore either.
Harold, it's a crosswalk up there.
They just have no common courtesy.
Harold, people in the crosswalk.
They simply show no respect for other people.
Look
out! Hey, get out of the road! Can't you see I'm driving here?
When we focus on the sins of others, we often lose sight of our own need for God's forgiveness.
Kids today have no respect for the law.
What's that?
That's my radar detector. Guess I better put on my seatbelt.
The Bible states that everyone has sinned. Have you thought about your need for forgiveness? Or are you focusing on the sins of others? A message from Lifeline Productions. 1-800-52-FUNNY at lifelinepro.com.
Listening to Truth Radio is not like listening to your favorite radio station often. There are many people who have to be sitting in front of their computers to hear the programs they want to listen to. That doesn't have to be true of you. You know, we record the programs, your favorite programs. We record them on CD, and we record them on cassette tapes. And we'd be glad to send you a copy of a CD or a cassette tape of your favorite program on a regular basis. All you have to do is let us know what you want, and we'll do it for you. It's a we give, you give. You just donate what you think the job is worth, and we'll, on a regular basis, either once a month or once a week, take care of charging your credit card and send you the program of your choice. Write to us at rp@truthradio.com, and we'll get to work for you.
To the Editorial Review. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Editorial Review is sponsored by Truth Radio Network. It's an educational service of public interest. Now, your support of Truth Radio and of our advertisers and sponsors is very important to us. So for more information about Truth Radio Network and of our advertisers and sponsors, remember that's very important to us. So if you'd like more information about Truth Radio Network programming, please go to the website. It's truthradio.com, truthradio.com. The Truth Radio Network is a private volunteer organization established as a private charitable trust for the purpose of exercising and defending free speech. Truth Radio is not a 501c3 tax-exempt institution, and donations are not tax-deductible. If they were, we wouldn't be free to tell the truth. Your financial support pays for our satellite time, internet audio streaming, and our overhead costs. So we thank you very much for that financial support. It comes from your donations that you make to Truth Radio here at P.O. Box 344, Nahomo, California, 93444. Again, that's Truth Radio, P.O. Box 344, Nahomo, N-I-P-O-M-O, California, 93444. Don't forget that free Fits in Your Pocket Shirk Radio for a donation. Now, Richard didn't tell me that there was a minimum donation. I'm suggesting that the donation be about $20. And remember, it has alarm clock and a clock, your phone jack, 8-channel shortwave. I think that's 8 bands of shortwave. AM, FM radio fits in your shirt pocket. I think for $20, it's a heck of a good buy. Crystal clear. I was amazed. It's a digital radio, digital, and I was amazed at the clarity from such a little, tiny radio. Here's tonight's wise old saying, it's impossible to make anything foolproof. Well, that's because fools are so ingenious. All right, let's take a look here at Ralph Nader announces his presidential candidacy. Before the Democratic Party and its liberal intelligentsia unleash its expected vindictiveness upon Ralph Nader's candidacy for president in 2004, it might consider the following. Al Gore, with an able assist from the U.S. Supreme Court, lost the electoral vote for president in 2000. He not only lost his home state, but that of his president. If his managers had spent less time in that campaign attacking Nader's candidacy, and had they spent more time arranging at least one trip to West Virginia, a traditional Democratic state, Gore would have won that state, making Florida totally irrelevant. Arguments that Nader worked within the Democratic Party for genuine change, as Howard Dean's populist candidacy in recent months leading up to the current primaries demonstrated, only begets the wrath of the party establishment intent on preserving its power and the present two-party monopoly governing our country. Progressives believe that it's important to defeat Bush at any cost, but as Nader points out, while it is important that Bush must be defeated, Democrats are currently incapable of doing that without someone running a third-party campaign with a strong Bush critique pulling them in the right direction. The tendency of progressives tied to the Democratic Party, while admitting to the party's sizable failings, is to still cling to the idea that this is not the time to run a third-party campaign from the left. They have no breaking point, no point of termination, Nader points out. They watch Democrats in office offer them one defeat after another without ever being willing to establish a termination strategy, a point beyond which too much is too much. So if the Democratic Party spent less time and effort trying to seduce its corporate paymasters, exhibit a willingness to wage an unintimidated and full-bore attack on George W. Bush's domestic and international policy, while turning the party of the people to its Jeffersonian populist roots, there'd be no need to waste its scarce resources continuously and needlessly attacking Ralph Nader. I reported to you not too far back that in the 2000 election that Nader was taking 64 votes away from the Republicans for every 50 votes that he took away from the Democrats, making the net result of 14%. So every 100 people that voted for Nader were taking 14 votes away from George Bush. Net votes. away from him. Nader was a plus for the George Bush team in 2000. So the concept that Nader is a drag on the Democratic Party is, I think, a fiction. Well, here's a humorous little joke, Will, or humorous little story. Let's see if we can close on this. It says it's a resignation. Finally, here is something that makes sense. My resignation. I'm hereby officially tendering my resignation as an adult. I've decided that I would like to accept the responsibilities of an 8-year-old once again. I want to go to McDonald's and think that it's a 4-star restaurant. I want to sail sticks across a fresh mud puddle and make a sidewalk with rocks. I want to think M&Ms are better than money because you can eat them. I want to lie under a big oak tree and run a lemonade stand with my friends on a hot summer's day. I want to return to a time when life was simple, when all you knew were colors, multiplication tables, and nursery rhymes. But that didn't bother you because you didn't know what you didn't know. And you didn't care about what you didn't know. All you knew was that to be happy because you were blissfully unaware of all the things that should make you worried or upset, which would make you unhappy. I want to think the world is fair, that everyone is honest and good. I want to believe that everything is possible, and I want to be oblivious to the complexities of life and be overly excited by the little things again. I want to live simple again. I don't want my day to consist of computer crashes, mountains of paperwork, depressing news, how to survive more days and months than there is money in the bank, doctor bills, gossip, illness, the loss of loved ones. I want to believe in the power of smiles, hugs, a kind word, truth, justice, peace, dreams, the imagination, mankind, the making of angels in the snow. So here's my checkbook, and here are my car keys, my credit card bills, and my 401k statement. I'm officially resigning from adulthood. And if you want to discuss this further, you'll have to catch me first. Tag. You're it. All right. Well, not since we decided that we wanted to eat off of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. There's a federal appeals court says no to Got Milk. To Got Milk dairy promotion program, known for putting milk mustaches on celebrities, violates the First Amendment by forcing all farmers to pay for the ads, even if they disagree with them, a federal appeals court ruled. I reported this story to you some time back. A dairy farmer decided he didn't want to participate in the government's compulsory ad program. The unanimous decision by a 3-judge panel of the 3rd U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals overturns a lower court's ruling in the case of Tioga County dairy farmer Joseph and Brenda Cochran. The lower court had found that the Cochrans could be forced to contribute money to the campaign, even though they felt its catchy slogans did little to support sustainable agriculture products. Well, in their ruling in Cochran v. Veneman, the Third Circuit made clear that just because an industry is regulated, and even if it's heavily regulated, that doesn't mean that the members of the industry have lost their First Amendment rights, said the Cochran's attorney, Steve Simpson, of the Washington, D.C.-based group Institute for Justice. That argument was originally rejected in March by a U.S. District Judge, John Jones, who maintained that the government could require the Cochrans to pay fees to the National Dairy Promotion Board, even though they didn't agree with the group's advertising. And the judge based that, no doubt, upon the Supreme Court's decision in Wickard versus Filburn, where it's hardly lack of due process or equal protection of the law for government to regulate that which it subsidizes, federal government subsidizes the dairy industry. Now, the court distinguished the Cochran's case from that Wickard versus Filburn decision. So the appellate court. See, this district court judge didn't make a mistake. He didn't have the capacity to change Wickard. He didn't sit there and say to himself, well, why should I change the law? I'm not the law changer. It's the appeals court that does that. So whenever you have an appealable issue or a constitutional question, you're going to lose in all probability down here at the lower court, just like happened in Brown versus School. Then when it goes up to the Court of Appeals, that's a policy-making board. The Court of Appeals, the appellate courts is where policy is made in America. We're going to abandon the concept of segregated schools, or we're going to adopt the concepts under Hale versus Hinkle. Policy is made in the appellate court. Well, the couple appealed to the Third Circuit, and the attorneys for both sides argued before the court in January. And in 1997, the Supreme Court in Glickman versus Wildman Brothers upheld a California law requiring fruit growers to pay fees that supported generic advertising for California fruit. Justices found the program legal because the fruit tree industry was collectivized. The tight controls on price and production levels eliminated much of the competition in the marketplace. You know, same rationale the district court judge used here in the milk case. The Cochrans don't set prices for their milk. They sell it to Mid-America Dairies or some dairy co-op or Borden's or somebody, and they take what they get. That's it. I think the milk industry is just as regulated as is the fruit industry. I think the argument there fails. But bear in mind that appeals courts can distinguish cases. So they've distinguished milk producers from fruit growers. But the fruit growers are in the same boat that the milk producers are. So if the fruit growers want to do a case out in the Ninth Circuit, they'll have to appeal it up to the U.S. Supreme Court. Then the U.S. Supreme Court will weigh in on it and say there's a split in the circuit. Fruit growers out in the Ninth Circuit have to have their fees paid for their advertising against their will. And over here in the Third Circuit, the dairy farmers don't. The Supreme Court weighs in on it and rectifies the circuit. So that's the way that game is played. All right, we're out of time. Back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. We've been with you. Thanks for listening. Until next time.